Good morning and welcome to Catholic Views. I am Gene Young, the managing editor of the Bishop's Bulletin, hosting for Jerry Klein this week, although Jerry will be along shortly with this morning's interview. He'll be speaking with Emily Leadham of the diocese about her new role within the diocese, so you'll want to stay tuned for that interview. We'll also have a look at the religious news from the past week. We begin this morning, as we do every Sunday, with the readings for this third Sunday of Easter. Donna Cannon with the first and second readings, and Monsignor Charles Mangan with the Gospel.
A reading from the Acts of the Apostles. Then Peter stood up with the 11, raised his voice, and proclaimed, "You who are Jews, indeed all of you staying in Jerusalem, let this be known to you and listen to my words. You who are Israelites, hear these words. Jesus the Nazarene was a man commended to you by God with mighty deeds, wonders, and signs, which God worked through him in your midst, as you yourselves know. This man, delivered up by the set plan and foreknowledge of God, you killed, using lawless men to crucify him. But God raised up, releasing him from the throes of death, because it was impossible for him to be held by it. For David says of him, 'I saw the Lord ever before me. With him at my right hand I shall not be disturbed. Therefore my heart has been glad, and my tongue has exalted. My flesh too will dwell in hope, because you will not abandon my soul to the netherworld, nor will you suffer your Holy One to see corruption. You have made known to me the paths of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence. My brothers, one can confidently say to you about the patriarch David that he died and was buried, and his tomb is in our midst to this day. But since he was a prophet and knew that God had sworn an oath to him that he would set one of his descendants upon his throne, he foresaw and spoke of the resurrection of the Christ, that neither was he abandoned to the netherworld, nor did his flesh see corruption. God raised this Jesus, of this we are all witnesses. Exalted at the right hand of God, he received the promise of the Holy Spirit from the Father and poured him forth as you see and hear." The Word of the Lord. A reading from the first letter of St. Peter. Beloved, if you invoke as Father him who judges impartially according to each one's works, conduct yourselves with reverence during the time of your sojourning, realizing that you were ransomed from your futile conduct, handed on by your ancestors, not with perishable things like silver or gold, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a spotless, unblemished lamb. He was known before the foundation of the world, but revealed in the final time for you, who through him believe in God, who raised him from the dead and gave him glory, so that your faith and hope are in God. The Word of the Lord.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. That very day, the first day of the week, two of Jesus' disciples were going to a village 7 miles from Jerusalem called Emmaus, and they were conversing about all the things that had occurred. And it happened that while they were conversing and debating, Jesus himself drew near and walked with them, but their eyes were prevented from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing as you walk along?" They stopped, looking downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, said to him in reply, "Are you the only visitor to Jerusalem who does not know of the things that have taken place there in these days?" And he replied to them, "What sort of things?" They said to him, "The things that happened to Jesus the Nazarene, who was a prophet mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, how our chief priests and rulers both handed him over to a sentence of death and crucified him. But we were hoping that he would be the one to redeem Israel. And besides all this, it is now the third day since this took place. Some women from our group, however, have astounded us. They were at the tomb early in the morning and did not find his body. They came back and reported that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who announced that he was alive. Then some of those with us went to the tomb and found things just as the women had described, but him they did not see. And he said to them, "Oh, how foolish you are! How slow of heart to believe all that the prophets spoke! Was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into his glory?" Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them what referred to him in all the scriptures. As they approached the village to which they were going, he gave the impression that he was going on farther. But they urged him, "Stay with us, for it is nearly evening and the day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them. And it happened that while he was with them at table, he took bread, said the blessing, broke it, and gave it to them. With that, their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, but he vanished from their sight. Then they said to each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he spoke to us on the way and opened the scriptures to us?" So they set out at once and returned to Jerusalem, where they found gathered together the 11 and those with them who were saying, "The Lord has truly been raised and has appeared to Simon." Then the two recounted what had taken place on the way and how he was made known to them in the breaking of bread. The Gospel of the Lord.
In the news this morning, during the blessing of construction and the groundbreaking for the new monastery for the Perpetual Adoration Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament, Bishop Paul J. Swain joined Tom and Mary Sink, co-chairs of the Bishop's Leadership Committee, Bernardo Sanchez, owner of Sanchez Painting, and Madre Caridad Morales, Mother Superior, in the initial symbolic turn of the shovel. So far, $5.3 million have been donated to begin the project. Donations are still needed to reach the $970,000 to complete the second phase of the monastery. A donation form, that is, and prayer request form are available at www.perpetualadorationsisters.org. You can read and see more about the groundbreaking and the monastery project in the May edition of the Bishop's Bulletin in homes across the diocese soon and online at www.sfcatholic.org. In other news, groups that legally challenge the Affordable Care Act's contraception requirement for employers still do not have clear direction on how to move forward, because nearly a year after the U.S. Supreme Court sent their cases back to the lower courts, the Justice Department still is appealing some of them. This past week, the Justice Department asked the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals for 60 more days to essentially pause the ruling in favor of East Texas Baptist University and several other religious groups that had objected on moral grounds to providing contraceptive coverage in their employee health plans. With a look at the news from this past week, I'm Gene Young reporting from the Bishop's Bulletin Newsroom. Now let's move on to this morning's interview.
This morning on Catholic Views, we are joined by Emily Leadham, and she's back. We're grateful to have her back, but in a new role. And Emily, great. You are now the director of the Office of Marriage, Family, and Respect Life.
Yes, I'm coming back from 3 months away with my little girl, Claire, who was born in January. So I got to spend 12 weeks at home with her. And yeah, I'm coming back into a brand new role. So I feel like I'm kind of hitting the ground running, which has been a gift to be distracted from taking her to daycare.
Yes, that first moment is always the toughest, isn't it?
I think it was more emotionally draining for me than it was for her. She had a blast.
Well, that's the most important thing. That absolutely is the most important thing. But this office, of course, has kind of evolved through the years. It's what, in a sense, used to be separate works of family life and respect life, and then adding the component of marriage. But there's a lot of good reason why one would do that, to put those topics together.
Yeah, I think you can't have one without the other without the other. And so there's a beautiful intentionality, I think, on behalf of Bishop Swain, that we want to renew married life. We want to renew especially that preparation process for our couples and parishes that are entering into this beautiful sacrament. And from that, the hope is that holy families would grow and would, if we can strengthen our marriage bond, that always overflows into the gift of the children that come along and all of that. So yeah, it's really a beautiful marriage, if you will, of all of these things. And then the respect life component, I think, ties in beautifully in light of, pro-life issues, end-of-life issues, all of those things. But also the rest of the diocesan staff have really taken up the respect life issues even within their own offices independently as well. So, yeah, there's been a great great marriage of all of those things, and I think it's been a beautiful transition.
And as you mentioned, kind of an evolution of working together and of opportunities that come because of that collaboration. Of course, you come directly from the team, the Discipleship and Evangelization Group, working with more in the area of youth events and some of the adult events as well. But you have that grounding in that area. What does that do for you as you begin this new work?
I think that's one of the things that I'm most excited for, is that I've spent really the last 3 years here at the diocese being formed by this mission of discipleship and evangelization, stemming directly from Bishop Swain, but particularly through Dr. Chris Bergwald and his efforts with the adults in the diocese, and then also Eric Gallagher and his efforts with the youth. And I think that's been an incredible gift coming into this role of marriage and family, respect life, because I have such a desire to extend, to broaden, to deepen our efforts of discipleship within those areas in particular. I think the Office of Marriage and Family Respect Life, in the past, there's been a great need for some of the legal things that are going on. So my predecessors were able to spend a lot of time in peer for lobbying and that kind of thing. They had a law degree. I don't have a law degree, and so I'm thankful that that's no longer part of the mission of the office, and that's changed and has been picked up elsewhere.
Right.
And so that opens up a little bit of a doorway, I think, to focus more, like I said, on that discipleship initiative within marriage and family. So I would love to see and brainstorm with the incredible priests of our diocese and other lay leaders, what would it look like to have discipleship groups for married couples, an intentionality of families coming together? I know you and your wife actually have something like that in your group of friends.
It's sort of an informal thing, yeah. But it gets at what you're talking about.
And I always, that comes to mind. And I know several of the couples that are kind of involved in that group. And I just thought, what if we could implement that? What if we could help foster that within our parishes so that we have marriages that are transformed by this community, this Catholic community that's surrounding them. So brainstorming little things like that, big things like that, I should say, is something that I'm really excited to continue and implement that formation that I've received in discipleship and evangelization into this process.
So there were a couple of words that really popped into my head as you were talking, Emily, and maybe we'll take one at a time, but I'm going to mention them both so I don't forget.
Yeah.
We talk a lot about the culture of life and that whole sense of the culture of life and how important that is and what a struggle it is to portray that today, to give example of that today, mm-hmm. in the world that we live in. So that's one. The other is, and this really ties into your world of discipleship and its relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's talk a little bit about each of those things in light of your work in the Office of Marriage, Family, Respect, Life. Let's start with the relationship, because I know that's, you're really grounded in that. And as you talked about, mm-hmm. married couples and modeling and all of that, isn't it all about relationship?
Absolutely. Well, and I look at my own life and my own conversion of faith, my ongoing conversion to the faith, I should say. I think it's a forever process for me.
For all of us.
For all of us, yes.
It is.
And but when I look at kind of my journey thus far, the Lord has used key players in my life and in my heart, you know, from different ministers to different friends to different, you know, when I was a youth, he put adults in my life that really spoke truth and invited me into a deeper relationship with him, all of those things. So looking at my own journey, my own conversion story, it's been all relationship based. Mm-hmm. The Lord kind of opening doors through that. So I think absolutely that we really can't do it without being in relationship with one another. And so, especially, of course, married couples are in relationship with each other, but what about relationships with maybe another married couple that can speak, you know, we have marriage sponsor couples, which is a very common thing. And I think the idea of that, the principle of that is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Let's seek out holy, faithful marriages. And, you know, my husband and I, we really cling to those, you know, and we see a marriage that we look at and say, they've got something going on. You know, we fight to just get in their company. Let's go out to dinner. Let's have you over for tea, for drinks,
yeah.
whatever it might
yeah.
be.
Yeah.
And just the joy that has brought into our marriage has been incredible. So absolutely that relationship basis, I think, is so important in light of discipleship.
And then what does that teach us? If we think about that, what does that teach us then about how to develop that cultural life? Can that lead us someplace?
Absolutely. And I think it's, you know, when we're in relationship with, my husband always says, you're most like the five people that you surround yourself with. And so if we surround ourselves with people that bring life, that bring joy, that bring truth, that changes our hearts. And I think that deepens across the board, this culture of life that we're talking about. And that really, and I always think the culture of life extends so beyond the pro-life issue.
Oh, absolutely.
It's such a deeper topic. It's such a broader term, you know, a broader motto, if you will. To really a life's approach and what does it mean to truly be a culture of life? It's to embrace the goodness of life across the board, at every stage, in every way, not just life or death, but in choosing to be joyful and choosing to, you know, do laundry with a sense of purpose and a sense of gratitude and a sense of joy all at the same time. That's building up a culture of life that truly transforms.
So it's at all levels.
All levels.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's little bitty babies to our elderly in nursing homes, but also everyone in between. It's you and me sitting here. We can, you know, propose a culture of life just in the way that we live our lives, I think.
We're not going to talk a lot about the particular events this morning because I know you're new enough yet.
Thank you for not putting me on the spot.
that some of those aren't even maybe known to you.
Yes.
And some of them are... you know, maybe up for some consideration about what they'll look like going forward. There could be some adjustments made.
Sure.
The one that I will mention that I know, at least as far as I understand, is going to continue is the anniversary masses. And
yes.
I'm so glad about that because if there is a sweeter event in the world, I don't know what it is.
Tell me about it. My parents, when they celebrated their 25th wedding anniversary, my family all attended the mass with them and then the reception afterwards. And I just, and it struck me, and this was before I was even working for the diocese, I think. And I just thought, this is the neatest thing, you know, what a beautiful opportunity. And especially Bishop being there and, you know, he greets every single couple that's there, has an opportunity to just take a commemorative picture with them, all those little things. So yes, those will continue. We already, I think, have all of those letters out and are looking to get our numbers back in for who's coming and celebrating their 25, 50, 65 year anniversaries.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that event continues and we're grateful for that. Again, we're not going to talk a lot about events. More broadly though, let's talk about family a little bit because, obviously this has a topic that the Holy Father has, really, tried to draw us into. He thinks there's something there that we need to really attend to. If you think about the two synods, both the regular synod and the extraordinary synod, and then his document, Amoris Laetitiae, that came out as a result of all of that work. There's plans for a nationwide gathering in our country this summer, and also I think a world gathering that's coming up in Ireland in the next year or
so. Yes, August of 2018, I believe.
Yeah, in the next couple of years. So a lot of focus on this. What do you think that's about, and what does that mean to you?
I am so struck. It's got to be the Holy Spirit at work. So I've really been kind of, since I've been back just a week or so, but trying to dig into as much of that as I possibly can and really be a learner in this, because I think the Holy Father is offering a teaching on what it means to be family and what it means to, for us as church, quote unquote, to invest in the family and to engage the family, if you will. So I've really, in my particular role, I feel like I'm just absolutely in this, I hit the sweet spot, you know, the jackpot of all times that I would come into this role. And here we are, you know, Pope Francis is just really hammering, and I use that term positively, hammering on the family. So that's been an incredible gift. I feel like he's doing all the work for me. You know, I don't really have to do much. He's laying out this teaching and this beautiful initiative, this beautiful mission for the family. You know, I think I thought a lot about the World Meeting of Families in Philadelphia. Was that last summer, last September, or something like that?
Almost two years ago. Yeah, it'd be 2 years ago in August.
You know, 2 years ago, that World Meeting of Families and just the profound impact that I think that had. You know, a lot of people I don't think had heard of the World Meeting of Families until it came to Philadelphia. And it lit a bit of a fire, I think, and people kind of started to question and wonder. And Pope Francis really was pointing to this is, you know, we call it the domestic church. Mm-hmm. This is where it starts. If you want to be a saint, go home and love your family. I think that was Mother Teresa that talked about that. So really, yeah, there's this beautiful initiative, this beautiful attention that's being drawn to how crucial our family life is. And so, yeah, like I said, Pope Francis has really been doing all the work for me. So I need to learn and read and really, you know, pick up after him and hopefully continue to just spread that mission within our own diocese.
And I would never want to be Pollyannish about this because there are some real issues in our diocese. I know that that's true. But on the other hand, this is a place, this place of Eastern South Dakota, where family is perhaps as strong still as it is almost anywhere else. It's certainly in our country, I think it's true. And maybe we have something to offer as well to share with others.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we come from, you know, we're farming, a lot of farming families, a lot of great sense of our heritage. I think I saw that at our legacy event in 2015.
Right.
There's a great respect for just this continuation for this history of people that have built the little church on the prairie that always sticks out to me, the prayer for our diocese. And yes, I agree. And I feel like I'm learning constantly from just these beautiful families, beautiful, faithful families that we have in this diocese. So yes, of course we have issues, and some cultural things that I think are a challenge for us. And yet at the same time, we have some beautiful examples across the diocese of commitment in marriage, a faithful family life, all of that.
When I think about you, Emily, I think about your own, if you will, transformation in the last, year and a half from now being married and now being a mother. And in a way, all of this preparation for you to lean into this work.
Yeah, I think the Lord put me through fire, just fire preparation, I like to think of it.
Yeah.
But no, it's been such a gift. And yeah, absolutely. You know, within a year, I was married, you know, in a new home and going through 9 months of carrying a little life and then welcoming her into the world. So yeah, I think just the beautiful experience that I've had, number one, makes me a learner. I'm soaking in all of the wisdom from these other beautiful mothers in my life and, you know, fathers as well. So that's been a great gift. But I think I'm kind of walking through that journey. I'm walking through that transition into married life. I'm walking through that transition into being a mother, into family life. And I think that offers, if I can say humbly, kind of a cool perspective that God has given me. And I sat through marriage preparation. I sat through, you know, some NFP classes, all of those things. And that, yeah, that's all really fresh. And so that's been, I think, God's way of kind of preparing me. And he knew all along that this was where he was going to move me. So I'm grateful to kind of have that fresh perspective. And hopefully we'll be able to take that and bring that into some, you know, continued revival, renewal, and deepening in our diocese.
So a lot of us who are a little bit older, we worry a little bit about the millennial generation. You know, we know that a lot of your contemporaries are not practicing their faith. They're not viewing things in quite the same way as you're expressing them. How do you go about trying to invigorate that age group in particular to see the beauty and the truth and the goodness of marriage and family and respect life?
I think we absolutely have to start speaking a new language. I think our tendency, and I'm so guilty of this, is to really speak that churchy language, to speak in terms that the average person doesn't understand or doesn't connect with.
Sure.
You know, to me, Creighton model of natural family planning means something very, very, very different than what it means to somebody that's not practicing the faith, that's not interested in natural family planning, that's not XYZ. And that's just one example, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think that we need to start changing the language that we use and making it attractive, because the truth is so attractive. The truth of the church is the most attractive thing in the world. In fact, it's why I fell in love with the church, because I saw this truth and I fell in love with it and I wanted more of it. But I was in a very unique circumstance in which the people around me were making it attractive, were speaking truth in a way that it was language that I understood, and it was language that invited me more deeply into that participation and to see the beauty that was right before my very eyes. Most of the time, most people don't see that. They don't get that because we as church don't present truth in that way. So I was really lucky to be in the right time and in the right place and God's providence working in a great way in that regard. But I think we need to start speaking a new language. I think we need to start making the truth attractive because it is attractive. So yeah. Allowing that beauty to shine through.
So you're talking about a bilingualism that's a little different than most of us think about, but honestly, that's mm-hmm. probably what we need.
Yeah,
huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in no way do we need to dismiss the truth. I think the thing that sticks out to me most about Pope St. John Paul II, Jason Everett's biography about him, he said, the thing that was amazing about John Paul was that he intensified the truth. He never watered it down. And he was the Pope of the youth.
Mm-hmm.
The young people, young families, young married families had conversions to the faith by listening and hearing what John Paul II had to say. And in no way was he dismissing, no way was he nope. watering down. In fact, he intensified it. He raised the bar. He called people on even more deeply than before. And I think, but he did it in a way that was attractive. He did it in a language that people understood. And I think we need to continue to kind of revive that.
Well, that's quite an agenda.
I know. We'll see how it goes. Say a prayer.
Yeah. Well, I know that we're going to have opportunity to talk as the months go on here and as you kind of delve in more deeply
to all of
these different
Absolutely.
Things, we'll have a chance to talk about some of the events as they come up. But as you go forward, it's just as we wrap up this morning, anything you want to leave us with, any particular thought or challenge that you want to leave with us this morning?
Number one, just a challenge for prayer. Please continue to pray, not only for me, but just very in general for those married families in our diocese, those in our average parishes trying to live out the faith. It's hard. It's hard work. And so, if you're a faithful listener, please just add that to your prayer intention. That would be remarkable. And I continue to have, I think, Mother Teresa in my head. If you want to be a saint, go home and love your family. So that'd be my challenge. It's something that the Lord is challenging me on. To go home and be the best wife, the best mother that I can be.
And if people have questions, please email me. You're open and ready?
Yes, please email me. My email is E as in Emily, Leedom, LEEDOM at sfcatholic.org. Not only questions, but ideas as well. I'd love to hear your ideas, your experiences, and what you think you could use, maybe as a young family or an older couple as well. I'd love to hear your ideas.
Great. Emily Leedom, new director of the Office of Marriage, Family, and Respect Life. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jerry.
If you have submissions for the Bishop's Bulletin or have a topic you'd like to hear discussed on Catholic Views, you can contact us via the internet at www.sfcatholic.org or by calling 334-9861. Have a great Sunday. We'll be back next week.